Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. So today's topic is in regards to training, and we're going to go through the steps of returning to training after a back injury. So this is one of the things I do most often is helping regular people or athletes return back to training after injuries. When I was younger, I was fortunate to get to do some work at University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, UPMC, and working with people with various injuries. And it was a really cool, eye-opening experience to see some of the background of like physical therapy and all that stuff. And I got to do that, and I loved it. It was a ton of fun. And then over the years of rehabbing my own injuries, I've learned a lot about how to handle that. And part of like how I learned how to handle and come back from injuries was reading like every book under the sun. So I bought college textbooks on anatomy. Like I have an undergraduate degree in health and phys ed, so I already had a pretty good anatomy background there. And but I bought more books, read all those. Dr. Stuart McGill has two books recently come out with about like back injuries. I bought those, read those. I remember I'd gone to a couple chiropractors and physical therapists. I'd ask them what their favorite books were. I'd buy them and read them. So I've read as much as I could fit in while still running a business. And I've put it to use with my own body. So I've have a slipped disc in my back. So if you look at an x-ray of my back, towards like in my lumbar, so lower back area, I have a disc that if you follow all the discs, it goes like boop, 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 and then there's one that's way off to the left, and then the rest of them. So it's kind of annoying. So that was a big pain in the butt, and at one point in time, I had daily back pain for 14 months. My back hurt all day, every day for 14 months, and I remember I had to work through that, and for me, I had an injury when I was younger. I was doing a deadlift competition, 440 pounds for reps, and I think I was on like 14th or 15th rep, and I just kind of felt something twinge my back a little bit. And this is when I was still young and kind of didn't understand good form. Like, I understood decent form to be able to deadlift 440 pounds for in the teen reps, so I wasn't that weak. But just kind of didn't pay attention to my form much. I was trying to win that competition, or at least do well. And just slipped a disc in my back, and it kind of became a problem. Then I didn't really treat it well. I kind of was stubborn and tried to work around it all the time and then work through it sometimes, which was so dumb. And then it just kind of got worse and worse, and then I led that period where my back hurt for 14 months every single day. And during that time, I was trying to learn how to train around it, and that's when I started reading and learning more. And I remember I was down to, it would take me 30, 40 minutes to get everything warmed up well enough where I could do some squat singles. So I remember several workouts where I would do 135 for one, 225 for one, 315 for one, 405 for one, and then I'd have to lay on the floor. There'd be a lot of inflammation in my back. I'd have a lot of pain, and it might take me 20, 30 minutes to get up off the floor and be able to move around anymore. So it was really a pain in the butt. However, 14 months I stayed with it, and I pushed through, and I'm glad I did because I was fortunate enough to now where I can lift with no pain whatsoever in my back, totally fine. And through that knowledge I gained, I was able to help a lot of people. So I thought it'd be fun to share kind of the steps we go through when I'm working with people coming back from a back injury. So I had, oh my gosh, a ton of people. So I'm trying to think of some good examples. We had one guy, when he was wanting to come back from training, he had a back injury, took some time off the gym, started getting fat and weak, and wasn't happy. And he said he wanted to come back, but he didn't want to get, like, he knew he didn't know enough to keep himself healthy and work back from this. So I remember when we first started, we were starting with probably maybe 135 on deadlifts, not even that maybe, and eventually got him up to doing 315 for sets of 10. I remember on squats, I made him start with the bar on like a box squat, and that was causing some irritation, but he eventually got up to 315 for 10 on those kind of squats. So we've had some people make a ton of progress in terms of strength. I've helped a lot of military guys with bad backs, a lot of college athletes with bad backs, that kind of stuff. So let's get into the nitty-gritty of this. So I wanted to give you a little bit of background so that way you could kind of understand where this information is coming from. It's coming from some formal education and then some mixture of real-world application. So this isn't just me regurgitating stuff out of a book to you. I know for a fact this stuff works. It worked for me, and it worked for dozens and dozens and dozens of other people. So this does work, I promise. So the first steps is we're starting this in the sense of, like, after the person was injured, they now have had enough time to recover from, like, the acute, like, injury that initially happened, and they're ready to come back to train. So they're maybe not 100%, but they're healthy enough to start training again. Okay? So that's where we're going to pick up here. And usually the first things we want to do is, in their training, is we want to address inflammation concerns and irritation concerns. So with that back injury. So the main goal we have that with that is to minimize the amount of annoyance and irritation that we cause into the injured area in our training. So if there's anything we can find in exercise that is causing irritation either in the moment, that's a huge sign to get the hell out of that exercise. Or if the very next day or the day after, your back's kind of annoyed, it's stiff, maybe you're feeling tightness again that you didn't normally feel until you did that workout, then the job is to try to go through that workout and identify what might have caused that irritation. So your back cannot heal well if you're constantly pissing it off. So do not work through an annoyed back. I learned that the hard way. It led to daily pain for 14 months. Okay? And that's not an exaggeration. It literally was 14 months every single day. It wore me out. It was not a very fun time in my life. So please don't do that. The research backs it up as well, as you can't just keep pissing off your back and expecting it to get better. Okay? So it's like picking a scab on a wound. It's just going to take forever to heal if it does at all. So you want to find anything in your training, any kind of movements that may cause irritation and lead to inflammation, and eliminate those. The next thing you want to do, or in conjunction with that, is to work on getting strong stabilization strength in your core. You want to be the world's strongest abs and kind of intramuscular strength around the core and the back. So it's six-pack, not only six-pack, but you got your obliques, you have internal, external obliques. There's a whole bunch of muscles, all related to our hips and things that deal with twisting of the spine and or flexion of the spine. You want to strengthen that stuff as if it's like your number one priority in life. So those are the two things we look at right away, is increasing abdominal strength, and we'll specify here in a second how we do that specifically. And the other thing we want to do is to eliminate and avoid as much as we can any inflammation or any kind of irritation to the lower back. So we have to make sure that we're very, 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 very kind to our back during our training, and recognize that being quote-unquote tough and being a hard ass isn't going to lead to anything productive. Okay, so it's like if you broke your femur, you broke your leg, you can't just be a hard ass the next day and go run a marathon. It's not going to work. So you have to recognize that it's more important that you be smart. And it's actually harder, mental toughness-wise, to take the small appropriate steps to get yourself better and stronger. It's harder to do that than it is to just try to hammer away at your old way of doing things. So be mentally tough, be mentally strong enough to learn new ways, rather than thinking you're mentally tough by just slamming away at the same stupid crap that got you injured, maybe. Okay? So you are not mentally tough if you try to do the same stupid stuff over and over again and try to get different results out of it. That makes you an idiot. Okay? Now, I am telling this to the younger me. I wish I would have heard this speech. And who knows if I'd have listened, because I'm a pretty stubborn dude. But I know if I would have listened, I would have saved myself a ton of pain. So, avoid irritation no matter what it is. Find a different way of doing that exercise. Don't do nothing. Doing nothing doesn't help. You gotta find something to do, but just try to find things that don't cause irritation. And one of the best ways to do that, like we said, is building stabilization strength in your core by performing non-rotation, non-flexion abdominal bracing exercises. Okay, sounds a lot of terms right there. But what we want to do is we want to do ab exercises where the goal is to not move. So, sounds pretty fun. You get to do an exercise where your goal is to not move anywhere. So you don't have to do crunches. You don't have to do all these crazy, you know, things and be in a lot of pain and all that fun whatever craziness people do. Your goal is to get into a position of resistance and not move. If you can do that, that's going to help you protect the musculature. The musculature is going to get strong enough around your spine to protect your spine. And the muscles will start to take the irritation, the annoyance, the workload off of your discs and joints and kind of all the tissues that shouldn't have that workload that have been irritated by a workload of that means. So, examples of these we have are planks, side planks. There are cable anti-rotations and band anti-rotations. So one of my favorite exercises is on a cable stack. We put the pulley at about the height of your chest. You put a single D-ring, so a single handle on that. You want to load up the stack with a decent amount of weight. Start light, though, if you're doing this for the first time. And grab the handle, keep it close to your chest, and step out away from the weight stack, standing sideways to the weight stack. Okay, so you're in front of the weight stack, you're holding a handle at your chest height, and you're going to stand sideways to the weight stack and then start stepping away. That handle and the weight load is going to try to pull you to where your chest would face the stack. Your job with your abdominal muscles, including your obliques and everything else, is to not let it rotate you. Do not let the weight pull and move you. So that's one of the best things you can do. So Palloff hold, P-A-L-L-O-F, a Palloff hold is a variation of this, and you can look that up. And you don't want to do, there are things called Palloff rotations, which involve rotating. You don't want to start with those. You want to start with holds. It's very, very important you at least perform one, if not like a full month's worth, one workout, if not a full month's worth, of non-movement core work, where your goal is to not move. It's really, really important because that's actually how you're going to protect your spine in everyday life, is making sure that you don't bend in awkward positions, you don't flex where you shouldn't, you don't twist where you shouldn't. So when we do everything outside of the gym, our goal would be to brace and protect our core so that way we're keeping our back safe. We'll work on that in the gym. That's what the gym can do. Okay, so don't be stubborn against this. These exercises are actually really freaking fun and hard. So you can look up anti-rotation or anti-flexion ab exercises on YouTube, and it's actually really cool, fun, challenging things to do. So we even have some videos on our YouTube channel as well. So once you get good at non-rotation, non-flexion movements, you then would add in, we add in things like loaded static holds and static carries. So this would be like a farmer's carry, maybe a Zerker carry, a front squat carry. We'll even do like odd weighted objects. So we have slosh pipes, which is a metal pipe that has like water in it. And like as you're walking, the water kind of sloshes around. And that is like the intention is that as the weight of the water moves side to side, it would push you side to side, but you're flexing in your core to protect against that. So we have other things we do, a whole bunch of stuff. Just like I said, just YouTube that and you'll find a million examples. So that's kind of the first things we do with our core training is do not do crunches. Don't do flexions. Don't do rotations. Do stuff that challenges you to not flex and not rotate. By far the healthiest, safest way to train your core while you're getting back from a back injury. Now, the next thing we converse with people is stretching. It's actually important that you don't overstretch, and especially in your lower back. So if that's where your injury is, you want to keep the musculature around that injury very strong and not tight in the sense that it limits movement, but you do not want it loosey-goosey to where the muscle does not absorb the pressure and just lets the pressure of movements and everyday activities dump into your lower back, into your spine. So what we do is we make sure that we stretch the thighs and the musculature around the hip. Okay, so make sure the adductors are loose, the IT band, like the TFL, glute min, make sure those are loose, make sure the quads are loose, make sure the hamstrings are loose, make sure that you can get as much movement from those muscles as possible so that whenever you're performing a deadlift or a squat or bending over to pick up something off the ground or tying your shoe, that you're going to not need as much rotation and flexion through your lower back to complete those movements. You want to get as much range of motion through those thigh tissues rather than having to round or slump through your lower back to get that stuff done. So we have a routine. If you'd like it, you can email us at brutalirongym@gmail.com. We'll send you the routine for stretching out your hips. And it's really important, like I said, to pay attention to stretching the thigh muscles that connect into the hip, but not overstretching your lower back. So you want to keep some rigidity and some tightness in that lower back, like we said, to kind of protect that back injury. So that's a quick thing about stretching. So if you're going to stretch, stretch the hell out of your thighs, but don't overstretch your lower back. Cool. Now, once you get the core strong and once you can kind of figure out a right way to stretch, that way you don't over-involve the lower back in general type movements, it's going to be, then usually you're going to be ready fairly quickly to do some type of loaded lifting. And what this would be in regards to is like, you know, squat and deadlift and overhead press and stuff like that. So one of the things we want to do when we're first working back into that type of lifting is to make sure we do a short duration, uprighted torso lifts. Okay? So short duration means you might only do a set of like 5 reps or less. And typically we're going to look for 20 seconds or less. And usually I start with people at 10 seconds or less. Because when you work on abdominal bracing and core bracing, it's hard to hold that for a long time. People get sloppy and they get lazy and then they can get injured. So it's better for you to do 10 sets of 10 seconds rather than one set of 100 seconds. Okay? You're going to stay safer. You're going to use heavier weight, which helps you stimulate more muscle growth and more muscle strength around your injury. So, and like I said, the main reason for it is it keeps you safe. Now, the uprighted torso component is the more your torso has to tilt in any movement, the more it activates uneven or like differing pressures into the lower back and the spine. So the more upright you can stay, the more evened out and well distributed you can keep any kind of pressure. So, for example, is depending on somebody's build, but in general, we would use sumo deadlifts rather than conventional deadlifts. For most people, sumo deadlifts allow them to have a more uprighted torso as compared to conventional deadlifts, and we'll even elevate the weight off the floor if we need to get a better uprightedness of the upper body. So sometimes we've had people start with sumo deadlifts at a 4-inch elevation. They'll do that for, you know, maybe a week or, well, different, there's a million ways to program this stuff, but they'll start with 4-inch elevation sumo deadlifts and kind of progress in that a little bit. Then they'll drop to 3-inch, then 2-inch, then 1-inch, then off the floor. So that's kind of the progression we would take, is start them in a shortened range of motion that we know is damn near 100% safe and is not really going to involve their lower back much in terms of forward flexion or forward tilt. We're going to try to keep them as upright as we can. Then with squatting, for example, we're going to do a high bar squat versus a low bar squat. And often we'll use a box or something to control depth. So we might actually start above parallel for squats just to get the person loaded and get them used to moving and bracing again. And then say we start with them 2 inches above parallel. We then move to 1 inch, then parallel. So something like that. So in the sense of where you start with a shortened range of motion that they can stay perfect condition in, so perfect shape, perfect technique, and then as they get strong there, you increase the challenge in the range of motion ever so slightly, and enough that they can feel tested by it, but not break form and have like those small irritations into it. So that's something that universal theme that we started with was do not do stuff that irritates your back. That applies for the rest of your life now if you have a back injury. So when you're doing all those ab exercises, if there's anything that causes irritation, skip that. Find an alternative. If you're doing deadlifts and squats again and there's something that causes irritation, skip that and find an alternative. Now the challenge can be if somebody doesn't have a large mental library of exercises, it can be hard to figure out what's the right thing to do. That's where you got people like me, so trainers and people who have educated physical therapists, maybe if they're experienced with lifting weights, go ask, go find out information, okay? So if every time you deadlift your back hurts, stop deadlifting the same damn way. There's a million ways to deadlift. Go talk to somebody who knows them and find the variation that works right for you, okay? And with those short-duration upright torso heavy lifts, we also try to use accommodated resistance if we can. And what that is like putting bands and chains on the weight. So the benefits of bands and chains, and I specifically prefer bands over chains when somebody's getting back into an injury, because chains have some variance when they hit the ground by link. There's a little bit of small like vibrations that we don't necessarily need at this time. So using bands is typically better because it's a more consistent pressure. And the reason why it's helpful to use those is as you get to the bottom of a squat and a deadlift, your lower back is going to be most tested. And that's actually when bands are the least amount of pressure on you. And then as you were to stand up in those lifts, your torso is going to get more into a straightened position in a safer, stronger position. And that's actually when the bands add weight. So instead of having your lift limited by your weakest position, which would be the bottom, you can have the lift change in its resistance. It can be lighter at the bottom, but heavier at the top, so it can challenge you more when you're in a stronger position. So rather than you putting in 100% at the bottom of the lift, but only 70% at the top, you can put bands on to where it's 100% the whole way through. That's going to be way more efficient way of training. It's going to get you way faster, way stronger. It's going to get you stronger, faster, sorry. But I do that all the time, every time I possibly can with any client I work with. Now, in our gym, we have a ton of capacity for bands. We have three full sets of bands in a 3,000-square-foot gym. So we use bands a lot. However, when I've trained with people online and clients who don't train here, it becomes a little more need for creativity to make bands work. But it is possible. Okay, so we'll carry some. I'll have them get a friend, because they're usually not healthy enough, actually, to get a dumbbells, some heavy dumbbells over by the squat rack, and maybe they can anchor off the dumbbells. They'll maybe anchor off some 45-pound plates. So we'll just find ways to wrap bands around stuff and make it work. But that's the idea. So then when you're getting through all the core work, you're never going to get rid of core work. You're always going to train core. We do it at the very beginning of every workout. So from now on, if you have an injured back, you will always train your core. And I would suggest you train it at the beginning of every single workout. No bullshit, no excuses. Do it. Okay? So keep yourself pain-free in that back by keeping your abs strong as hell. Then when you get back to those lifting like the squats and deadlifts, with those short-duration upright torso heavy lifts with the accommodating resistance like the bands. Once you do well with that, you progress through with that, and say you want to get to normal reps, normal stuff. And even during that type of stuff, when you get into main lifts like squat, bench, deadlift, all that stuff, technique is going to be absolutely important. So like we said, it's very important that you do not cause inflammation and irritation in the discs and the injury. So what you want to do is make sure that your technique always stays super crisp. So we have a rule that I'll sometimes teach people is when they're brand new, like just starting back to lifting after an injury, their rule is the absolute second anything gets off course, they have to stop. It doesn't matter if you think you can fix the next rep. So if you have a goal of 5 reps and number 3 feels a little weird, or you're a little bit forward, or you get off balance a little bit, you don't get to try to fix it on number 4. One and done. That's the rule. The second something happens, you rack the freaking weight, okay? Or you drop the bar if it's a deadlift. You just get the hell out of position just to be sure and be safe. So that's the rule when they're first starting back, is one and done. And it does not hurt you to stop at rep 3, kind of take a second, evaluate what happened. Maybe you're totally fine. Then you can start the next set, okay? So often when I program clients like this is I'll have them do, like, say, 20 reps, and they'll do them in singles. So they just do one rep at a time. Then eventually we might try to get a 20-rep volume in 10 sets of 2. Then we might try, you know, 7 sets of 3, you know, stuff like that. So we do very short duration, like I said, so that way they can be mindful of their technique and they only have to do it in small chunks. So at first, this is a little mentally exhausting to have to turn yourself on and off, you know, 20 reps to be perfect with technique, but you'll get better at it with your practice. So just do it. Then as they get more safe with their lifting, and let's say they're back to regular lifting and what they would consider is their new normal now, we still have a rule. Our rule is 2 bad reps. So if you have 1 bad one, you get a chance to see if you can fix it. But the second you would have 2 bad reps in a set, you're done. So say we're going for a set of 5. Number 2 felt a little weird. I fixed it on 3, but number 4 felt weird. I stopped. Because number 5 is probably going to be an injury. So it's always, always, always better to end with a few reps short so you can do a couple more sets and be safe rather than try to push for 1 stupid rep and get yourself injured and now have to slide back and start all over again. Okay? And then the next thing we have, the rule is to be diligent about small progressions. So don't do anything crazy. Don't try to move up 50 pounds at a time. Just really small progressions. So 2.5-pound plates are freaking awesome. They make them for a reason, so use them. So maybe you have 1 week you just do like, say, 10 sets of 2. And then the next week you're going to add 2.5-pound plates per side. If you were successful at all 10 sets of 2. And you could try that the next week. It's just make a 5-pound gain. So one of the worst things I hear all the time is somebody says, oh, 315 felt really good. Let me go to 405. What the hell? There are a lot of numbers in between 315 and 405. You don't have to progress by a 45-pound plate every time, okay? So take small jumps. It's you're in this for the long haul, and what you're doing with weight training is making yourself more resilient in everyday life and safer in everyday life. So understand that that's the process, is you're making small gains in the gym so you can be healthy for the rest of your life. If you try to be stubborn and take big jumps, you're always going to be injured. You're always going to be, oh, you know, my back hurts, blah, 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 blah. You know, or, oh, I could do that if my back didn't hurt. You'll be one of those people. Don't be one of those people. Don't talk about how your back always hurts. Fix your damn back. Okay? So that's how you do it, is keeping your technique perfect and make small progressions. Cool. Now, we're getting a little bit long-winded, but I do want to touch on reverse hyperextensions and the concept of decompression. So if you have a back injury and you're looking about training in your back again, you probably are going to run across an exercise in a machine called reverse hyperextensions. Freaking awesome, wonderful, amazing machine. We have one in the gym, one of the best things I've ever bought, one of the best things that ever helped my back, ever, ever, ever. However, you have to learn how to do it right. So Louis Simmons, the inventor of the reverse hyperextension, has a video on YouTube. If you type in reverse hyperextension, Louis Simmons demonstration, you're going to hear him teaching you, okay? Only listen to his videos. He's a freaking genius. He invented the machine. Do everything he tells you. Do it exactly 100% the way he tells you. Don't look at it and go, yeah, 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 I got the idea. No, 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 okay? Do it exactly the way he tells you. Start into it with very light progressions, maybe even just body weight, slowly adding plates. But if you're wondering, should you do reverse hyperextensions? Almost always, I've yet to find anybody who it isn't appropriate for. Okay, it's a great, great exercise. Now, other forms of decompression, which means like after you're done training, how do you loosen a tight back? Other ways we have is hanging leg raises are actually really good for kind of pulling your hips open. I mean, your lower back open because the weight of your legs. And then there's belt squat walks. So if you have access to a belt squat, you can put on a lot of weight and kind of walk around, and that'll kind of pull your hips open. So you can even put on like a dip belt and kind of hang from a pull-up handle, and that'll help kind of pull your back open. So there's a lot of ways that you can do decompression on your spine. So Donnie Thompson, who's a famous powerlifter, he has a way of kind of hanging upside down from a squat rack and bands. It's not a bad idea at all. I've done it. It's a little bit elaborate to set up, and it's not maybe the safest thing for all cases. But there are variances out there. So it's like an inversion table for fat people, basically. you use the bands to hold you up rather than an inversion table. But I think reverse hyperextensions and hanging leg raises and belt squat walks are a little bit easier to set up and a little bit safer to manage and maintain. So But there's a ton of stuff out there. So if you hear about that stuff, it's really good to do. However, you have to add it in very small, okay, very slowly. So reverse hyperextensions are great, but you have to make sure your technique stays on point. Cool. So, okay, so that's kind of everything. That's a quick rundown of it all. And we do have some programs that might help if you're looking for an idea on how to train. So shoot us an email, and we'll send you some of our programming samples, and you can see if they're appropriate for where you're at. Okay? And like I said, if you're looking for educational material, Dr. Stuart McGill, that's McGill, M-C-G-I-L-L, I believe. He has some really good books about lower back health and kind of teaching yourself how to train and improve your back. Cool. So hopefully this was helpful. So our takeaway messages are to strengthen your core. Technique is absolutely important. Don't do things that irritate your back. And patience. So take your time and make progression slowly. Cool. So hopefully you found this information helpful. If you have any specific questions about your situation, shoot us an email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. We'll help you out, okay? So if you like this information, you can find more from us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, Brutal Iron Gym. Also, if you like the podcast, you can sign up to become a patron of the podcast by donating $10 or more a month to the podcast. And for your donation, we'll send you monthly programming. And it can be for any goal, strength, aesthetic, overall health, training at home with no equipment, whatever your goal might be, we'll send you a program for only $10 a month, okay? And if you want to become a patron, you can sign up directly on the Podbean app. You can send us an email or do a Google search, become a patron, Brutal Iron Gym Podcast. And if you like the podcast, please share it with family and friends. The more people we help, the happier the world will be. And if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions, we'd love, love, love to hear from you. The podcast is for you, so we want to know what you want to learn about. You can reach us at our email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful. And thank you for listening.